logically, got to impose fines on these so-and-sos for taking financial advantage of my client. But since they're broke and can evade a financial sanction, got to toss them in the clink besides, and more hateful garbage. So guess what happened next? Scott?
Let me turn my tape.
I might add, by the way, this tone is inspired by Commander. He gave written instructions several months back. He said, let's get as nasty in print as they are. So this is an attempt to do
well,
that.
Well, I have to say, Bruce, that Dorma said to EJ, gosh, were we in the same courtroom?
This is one man's opinion. So guess what happened next? God spoke. It wasn't through Doris or anyone else watching, but through Judge Coyle himself. Right in the middle of the kid's ramblings, quote, I'd recommend at least 75,000 to 100,000, Your Honor, in addition to prison time, blah, 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 it came. Suddenly, the judge said something like, by the way, for the record, where does USNP claim Dr. Russell got his material? Ah, never give up on God. Well, it was pathetic. Here's where the more experienced counselor might have pulled their fat out of the fire was the mealy-mouthed lawyer talk. But Junior was on the stand, and since he'd been spouting his freewheeling hate talk so glibly, obviously a specialty of his, but just as obviously talking without thinking, they thought they had it made, don't forget, he just couldn't get his brain turned on in time. No more than liars like George Green can remember to repeat the same lie twice in a row. And out it came. Well, he got it from his research and from his own spiritual sources. Touche, baby. In those few ill-chosen but factual words, their own lawyer gave the lie to the whole case and to the judge's rude refusals to go into the source of Doris's material, her own spiritual sources. Nobody went to jail. No fines were set. The weasels will meet again in a week to consider the further evidence EJ inserted into the record of just how trivial and spurious this whole red herring is. But the crucial admission of Doris's material, resting on exactly the same authority as Russell's, which is what EJ had been arguing from the beginning, was made in front of a packed courtroom of note-takers and is now permanently on record in the transcription of the hearing. Now just watch the headlines if this goes to criminal contempt charges or even to sanctions of any kind. Quote, God on trial in Judge Coyle's courtroom. Why, it'll make Miracle on 34th Street look like a documentary. Go on, you clever, clever fellows, but never forget, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature or to fool with God.
Very good.
Well, since she can't be here to tell her own story, after they got out of the courtroom and into the hall, mill around just a little bit and wonder what in the world hit you, you know, what. Has the freight train really gone on by, or is it still squashing your fingers? And Paul put his arm around her, and they started toward the elevator. And she is saying, well, I kind of hope it goes further because Eustace, maybe he said, was Eustace going to come? And she said, yes, and Eustace, it was decided this was not the day for him to be here. He will be here later. At any kind of appeal or whatever, and so will the group from South Africa. And I want to tell this because I want you to know that Eustace was prepared to come and testify. He was a close friend to both Lau and Walter Russell. And he knows what their wishes were. And, of course, the information that has been utilized since that time of the first controversy came from Tom Astley in South Africa, who also, they had at least five that were coming for that Tuesday gathering with their tickets reserved. And amongst them was Tom Astley, who has done those incredible diagrams. And he had never heard of Walter Russell, period. He was given all of this information, and he didn't know what to do with it. And Ann Forbes, I believe it was, possibly Carol, said, well, we know someone in California that has some of that information, and you might be really interested in it. And so years ago, sent many, many of these incredible drawings, and his receiving. This is what the law system has come down to. You see, you need to go back in there with your succinct charges and charge them with contempt of court personally against this judge. The things they did, the lies they told, the misrepresentation has got to be more insulting and contemptuous to a judge than anything anybody could have done. And you see, they had only given him back his injunction, which was made a permanent part of the record. Why? Because nobody had any reason not to, as severe as it was. There was never a hearing. And all of you will notice that when Doris said, well, I was convicted and sentenced without hearing or trial, you handed down this contempt charge against me. And it was the day that Waco was burned out by the FBI and the BATF. And I'm sure all of you noted, I never put that together. And it wouldn't have, whatever it fizzled out into, you know. Well, you could almost feel sorry for this little Stephen Horn clone that was up there. This dangerous, incredibly contemptuous pair making all of this money. It's all about money. How much money do you really think you've made off US&P, for goodness sakes? US&P and Swannanoa Palace is falling down. But anyway, back into the hall. This was said, and the South African group will be here also, only to turn around and little Weasel Nose was right there, right at their elbow. And he is just crimson red, and he is just trying to get out of there. And so the elevator comes. And I'm sure that he thought God had struck him. There's Dorma, there's Paul, and there is Buchanan and Seymour on that elevator. And that woman had the audacity to walk in there and say, well, gentlemen, we have to go down together. And they are captured. Mr. Buchanan is really quite enjoying himself, I think, because they always got along quite well. But she looked at him and just waggled her finger at him and said, you better find out where your client got his information. You can almost feel sorry, except that this is what these lawyers are taught. And you can hear in the back of your mind the wisdom of a Jerry Spence who said, I thought when I was young I had to shred everybody until I destroyed my own case. And I'm sure that he thought he was making some remarkable speech to that judge. And Carl's been on that bench so long that he is retiring. He just wants out of there. And he wants Coyle to throw these old, nasty, rotten criminals into prison. And while you're at it, Judge, give us $100,000. Just after he said it's all about money. Over there. So it was an interesting experience. You have to witness it to have any idea it happened. Any idea. And yet the entire thing is all missed. Because when you got into the courtroom, you heard the judge say it. You heard the judge say it. Every time you try to talk about anything, that's not what the case is about. So the entire case was structured over contempt of Judge Coyle. And Judge Coyle is ruling on this. And yet he knows that there was never hearing. If it ever came up again And now it has come up again. He has to consider these people could come back in here now against me. Because they have been hauled back into court asking for prison time for contempt of myself when I never even gave them a hearing. And that's what the case was about. But you see, they brought everything else in and stirred it up. But the judge knew. And this is why you need an English professor to go through with all the charges, pick out the subject, and begin to structure these cases in such a way that there's no misunderstanding what this is about. But he had to listen, didn't he? When you go in pro per and your lawyer says you can't do anything, you can. He had to listen. He could threaten and terrify and rule against you before you ever get started. But he has to listen. The court is not so far down that road that he dared not. If it had been anybody else, he would have just, this case is over. $100,000, and if you do it again, you're going to get in prison. So he could have, but the fact he dared not do it tells you that you still have a shred of possibilities. Anyway, it was an interesting time. And basically what happens now is we've only begun. You can't let them walk away with this. You have to be prepared. And Jean says, well, I think that you should write a letter and I'll help you structure it to Judge Coyle so that when they get their rebuttal material in, you have an opportunity to let the judge know you want to respond to that. If it goes that far, that poor little kid really should never, never have come back in that courtroom, because the judge basically said, all right, if you've got proof, you come back here at 3:30. And that usually is a signal to them to, you better shut this down, Buster, because they may have some proof. And you see, what happened was he gave them another opportunity after they looked at what they were handed. And I thank you, Valerie, for doing this, because what he thought was a total Xerox reproduction looked like a few hen scratches here and there. And pages of nothing that was even the same word, see. And now with the Okilo information, what kind of a case does this man actually have in that courtroom? And now they had an even bigger one, because E.J. was able to say there was no legal basis for Timothy Binder to bring this case. It is unlawful according to corporate law. So they've got quite a few things to think about. On the other hand, if we are going to have a law center and we are ever going to have truth brought back into the court system, we need to be prepared. And we don't have to even do anything with it, do you understand, depending on what the ruling is. And the judge said it right up front. You know, he said it to them. If I rule in your favor and against them, it could be months or years. And I will have to supply them with an attorney and bring in the entire prosecution system. And he was kind of saying, they don't really look like they've been too contemptuous to me. They're too timid, you know. So what you really want me to do is just scare shit out of them. Well, this is the way we start. We start with great respect for the court, and maybe he'll begin to live up to it. Let's move on and listen to Little Crow before we have a break.
All right.
I want to get into that kind of an attitude.
A little difficult
It's a little difficult to hear little Crow right off the start here. What he says is, "Good morning, this is little Crow." And remember that he had just come off of a very bad period of time. This was made on the 12th of January, 1997.
Center. I hope you don't mind if I sit down.
I like to sit down.
Long way down.
I was down in Germany for one time, so the reports of my death are greatly exaggerated. But I did want to come this morning and to share with you the information that I need to share with you. And I hope that you'll buy this tape so that you don't misquote or misstate or misrepresent what you hear. To some of you, this will make no sense at all, and that's okay, it's not supposed to. To others of you locked into the mystique and mystery of Indian stuff, you'll love it. You'll gobble this up. And for those of you who are here for the first time, you will be hearing a story that is somewhat unexplainable. One of the funniest things that happened this morning for me was when I related to someone and a series of events, their comment was, "Oh, for what purpose?" I went to reach to the phone, just kind of, you know, punch them in the face a little bit. But on December 27th, I went into a 106-degree state. Temperature, body temperature, 106 degrees sustained. And that temperature remained until January the 1st at 6 in the morning. I was here on the 29th with you, but I wasn't. It was my walk-in who was here because my spirit was not. I spent 6 days isolated for the most part. And when I say that, I mean isolated to the point that it was an internalization of isolation. Even though there may have been people around me, I was cut off. I spent most of those 6 days in bed. Now, I know many of you thought that it was the flu or the cold or it was something else like that. It had nothing to do with anything of this earth, nothing to do with anything in this physical world. This was purely a spiritual experience. I'm not quite sure I called for it or asked for it, but I had it. During that period of 6 days, I journey to the spirit world. I died 6 times. And I returned 6 times. And I'll say that again so that you can hear it, that I died 6 times and I returned 6 times from that spirit world. Getting past the delusions and all the other kind of things that the body goes through, there was nothing left but pure breath and pure thought. And during those 6 journeys, each journey showed me something different. And as each journey ended, the realization of that journey for me was beyond words. It was beyond words of any kind. And I'm not sure that I can ever explain it in the context that it occurred, because everything was a fusion of light
and you had one small light, which was my spirit, and one small light, which I found to be the spirit of the Creator. Every minute, every second that I lay burning with fever, my body burning, literally burning, frying, my focus was upon my faith, and my faith is the concept that life is indeed breath. It is breath. The concept of breath, whether it be in a sustainable environment, that's the scientific part of our world, is that some places you have breath and some places you can't, and that's untrue now, I know that. Because breath is sustaining life force of the Creator, Wakantanka, the Mother Father Creator, God, if you will, whoever. And to see things change in format and form, because of spending the time in bed and my bony legs, I would put pillows between my legs, my ankles and my feet, my knees. And these things changed during the course of these seconds and minutes and hours that I burned. And the things which I saw and dealt with, those issues of life and the creation of our myths, the idea of health, wellness, the idea of sexuality and sensuality, the idea of feminine and masculine, and truly the idea of faith. It was a long, long, long journey, and even though I physically moved around and spoke to people, it was not Little Crow. The Little Crow that you saw on the 29th of December is no longer in existence. I literally cooked, and everything that was ever wrong with me is now gone. My prostrate is gone, the problem is gone. Whatever diseases I may have had in my blood are gone. And also gone is the capacity to hate, to have animosity towards any human being or anything within the universe. I still guess I reserve the right to not have to interact, but I know that's even a defensive process, because we interact constantly with each of our breaths. What I saw disease to be, what it was shown to me to be, and how it was explained. How the millions of people who never have an opportunity to draw that last breath and to realize, to have faith that that breath will sustain them in whatever world they go to. Six bears came to me and stayed with me. My medicines have been the eagle, the crow, red-tailed hawk, the eagle spotted owl, and the bear.
You get that, EJ?
Those medicines have been given to me over the years, and I've used them quietly sometimes and other times in ceremony. And they came to be with me and to watch and to observe. Yeah, thank you. My vocal cords have been burned, scorched. My body is trying to put itself back together. I walk different. And as soon as my wax that cooked inside between my ears, that old earwax shit, once that stuff dissolves, I'll be able to hear better. And my voice will change again. It's just purely spiritual in its nature. I thought of many things, my fear and it was a scary, fearful time for me, even with fate. But I held on to the idea of breath, and that breath is indeed life. And the inner voice within saying again, go to the breath. Go to the breath. Isn't nothing to do with going to the light? Light comes from darkness, and darkness comes from light. I swirled and whirled in the universe for 6 days and nights. I'm pretty caught up on the current status of the universe and our position in it. I was able to journey to the bottom of the sea and see our brothers and sisters and visit as our sea has died and is dying. A friend of mine has been reading a book called The Coming Plague. And all of those things are so true. And the coming plague is us and other things. It wasn't a doom and gloom journey, it was a spiritual journey. For what purpose, reason? As I said, my body's putting itself back together now, very slowly. Learning to walk a new way and carry my body. I went from a size 36 to a size 34, but I've been doing that for a while. I switched my wearing apparel, non-twill, no polyester, and I'm going to khaki. Khaki's wacky, you know. It's easy to take care of, and it looks good anywhere. I had no pain, I had no headaches, I had no neck aches. My body hurt because it burned. There were pockets of resistance that are still breaking loose. And 3 or 4 days ago, I was able to sweat and smell my armpits, and I said, "Ah, Eureka, I'm alive." My body functions are back to normalization, whatever the hell that means. The biggest one being being able to go to the bathroom with regularity, being able to urinate and completely empty the bladder with no residue, no dribbles, no pain. I've been cured. I've been healed. I've died 6 times. And have come home 6 times. I don't know this body. I don't know what it's going to do. I was walking kind of goofy for a couple of days. I was disorientated and my equilibrium was off. But that's taken care of itself. So I wanted to make this tape today to share with you how glad I am and grateful I am to be back. Some mornings I just woke up crying in the middle of the day, in the middle of the night. One morning I woke up singing prayers to the Creator. And I thought that might have been delusional, but it wasn't. I was actually singing there, sitting in bed, singing and giving thanks to the Creator for life. And the feeling of centeredness and the feeling of connectedness and remembering truly that we are all connected. It occurred to me that the points of light, the pinpoints of light that I saw approach me during these 6 days, and as I wandered that universe out there in the darkness and yet all the lights, there were points of light which came towards me, and I knew these to be your prayers and good thoughts of people. I knew them to be those prayers of those of you who knew me and those of you who never knew me, but that you did. Again, it's nothing of the physical illness world, it's nothing of the physical world at all. And that's why I say the mystique and mystery of our Indian world, my Indian world, my Indian faith, sustain me. Because I believe in the Creator
envelops and encompasses everything. And I believed in that, that if you hold on to that faith, that whatever there is, you will prevail. So that I know there's no death now, no real death. We'll talk about death. I feared for my family. I wept. I didn't want to go unexpectedly, you know, just some old geezer's body found in his bed, cut off from everyone and everything. So I thought about my family a lot and I prayed for them. I knew there were things I still needed to do with my grandchildren, all of them, all eight of them. I knew there were still things I needed to see my children accomplish. I knew there were still issues and things that I needed to work with my wife Alice about and to work with her. And then there were those of you who I just couldn't leave because you wouldn't know what the hell to do. And I don't say that from ego, I just say it from reality. My poor, poor, poor sisters and brothers, and I prayed and cried and thought, I can't leave you now. You're still just a little bit short of a full load.
And when this tape is over, I would like to spend a few minutes off the record before we have a break.
But I couldn't leave you because I love you. And I keep thinking I make a difference somehow. And I keep thinking, and I know this story here will make a difference, and I hope you get this tape and take it, reproduce it, whatever you want to do with it, because don't try to tell anybody what I said. Let them hear for themselves, because you'll distort it. You'll mess it up. And I don't want you to do that. I want you just to take the tape and use it however you wish to. And I thought about a lot of other things, too. I thought about the gathering, the community, the building of sanctuary. I spoke briefly with Alice about hopefully we can turn our backyard over there into a sanctuary where people can come and rest. Come and rest. And find sanctuary, find peace within themselves. Not to know him, mind you. But just kind of come and sit. Well, I have a fire pit, and I've approached one of my brothers to be the fire keeper. As I said, for some of you, this will make no sense, and you could care less. For others of you, it will pull and tug at a bell or someplace inside, deep inside yourself, because you have all been there one way or another. To build a gathering to the strength and capacity, I've been given this series of six things, six visits to and back, and I'm going to develop that into a physical resource to build our building and for us to continue to do our work. In helping people on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis, we're not here to feed the hungry or house the homeless. We're not here to see that people get sober or stay off drugs. That's not my function. My function, as I say, is to continue to respect you and the sacredness of your being and the spiritualness of your creation, and to reinforce somehow within you that you are indeed sacred. We're everything and we're nothing. We're greater and we're lesser. all of these things fulfill our reasons for being here. When creation began, there was only one rule, one thing to remember. We were given one thing to remember, that everything is related and that everything is connected. And what happens to one thing, no matter how large or small, happens to all things in equity, in parity. So we're not separated and alone because of our color or gender or sex or persuasions or our politics. We are connected through God, the breath of life, Wakantaka and Doji. We are accountable to make the world a better place. We have been subject to dreams and interpretations and manipulation. And part of that journey was about manipulation, that everything is manipulative. Every point carried to its furthest point is manipulative. Sexuality is manipulated to a point that it pits our integrity against armor. And I don't want to say morality, it's our spirituality. All that's been burned out of me, whether my body ever comes to that place again, or that kind of a physical need, I'm not sure, and I'm not gonna argue with my body or argue with anything about that. It's not there now. It isn't. I respect and love as I see you for who and what you are. Not a sexual piece of flesh or a sexual concept or a sexual connotation. I have that no more. But I see you in the sacredness of your being and the sacredness of your spirituality and appreciate your beauty and appreciate your being as you are. We have been manipulated into beauty versus ugliness, fat versus skinny, Republican versus Democrat, sober versus drunk, clean versus dirty. It's all the same. It's all the same. That's why my body's putting itself back together, and I'm amazed by what it's doing. And teeth been enamelized, man. All the holes cooked over. All the broken off teeth. Burned. No food's going to get in there. Can't stick food in porcelain. My lips are just coming back. Just getting my lips back. And I feel I should be coughing and hacking or something, and so I do that occasionally. But there's no real reason for that. I don't hurt. I don't have any pain, brothers, sisters, children. The Creator has cooked me. And the voice says, "You sure you want to do this? You sure you want to do this?" I've always believed that if you boil the blood long enough, and they've even tried this a couple of places, if you boil the blood long enough and hot enough, and you'll kill everything in it. And that's what happened. You see, before you, a different little crow, not the same one. Teyaduda, Red Nations, his Red Nation, that's who I am, Teyaduda. I need to talk with my nephew back home, and then I wanted to write him a letter, and he called. I wanted to talk with somebody else, and they called. And as I said, I can't explain this. It isn't something you can explain, the why. But for my spirit, it was necessary, and for what I'm able to do, it was necessary. There's a healing power now embellished here, embodied here. I'll use it with propriety, and I'll use it hopefully with wisdom.
because if I touch you, you heal. But it's the kind of healing that you have to be accountable for. It isn't anything magical, mystical, anything religious. It's purely the spirit. I'm happy and joyful that I'm back in the world. I'm joyful that I came back from that spirit journey. I am joyful that I have my family around me and my friends and those who love me and who have tendered me mercy in these long days since the 27th of December. I thank them and appreciate them and send the love from my heart to them. And to all of you who have wondered and called and spoken, it is indeed a good time. It is a good time because I'm able to share with you this story, this Olaka. And I would trust that you would share it in a good way, that you not try to repeat it, that you may reflect upon it. But in a circumstance, if you wish somebody to hear and to share with them, then please get a tape. That's all. That's all I ask of you. Just get a tape. I will be doing probably a little less, hopefully maybe not, in the future. I will be speaking and talking, but I want my brother Victor to come out. I want him to come out and to sound his voice, to speak his heart. He is a gentle man, gentle human being. He's a human being, though, as we are all still human beings. But we will grow and become strong, and this place will move, and people will grow and become strong, and they will move. We will touch all facets of the world, all parts of the universe. Our messages are simple and clear and will be heard in all parts of the world. We will be creating a 6-part video series, much like Bill Murray and Joseph Campbell. Campbell's work was of this world, mine is of the spirit world. 56 different segments done by firelight, and hopefully moderated by my good friend Paul Apataka. The setting will be such as firelight in low-intensity lighting. There will be invitations for people to attend those sessions. They will be filmed.